We'll see. From the CCNFO, we have Martin Boyle, Becky Burr, Keith Davidson, Christy Spain, Stephen Dearhake, Amber Hart-Lisa, Patricia Poblete, Nigel Roberts, Bill Semick, Dottie Sparks LeBlanc, and from Liaisons, we have Cheryl Langdon-Orr. From Staff Support and Special Advisors, we have Jaap Akkerhout, Bart Boswinkel, Kim Davis, and Christina Nordström, and Bernie Turcotte. And apologies from Suzanne Bedell.
Very good, good attendance today. Is anyone on the call whose name wasn't mentioned? Has anyone else received any apologies? Okay, let's move straight into item two on the agenda, and that's further discussion on the final report. Cheryl, would you? Ah, thank you, Cheryl. It was supplying that feedback. Can I just comment? Nigel made a comment on the list saying. The idea that we had disputed text was not perhaps the most appropriate terminology, and I apologise for that. I think in my haste I probably used antipodean coarseness in suggesting it was disputed text. It's just as yet unagreed text. So if we work through today, I have little doubt that we'll reach agreement on all outstanding texts, and that there will be no dispute. I'll be eternally an optimist and hope that we can get there. Anyway, can we proceed and work our way through the draft and those pieces of text that haven't been fully agreed yet? But Bernie, do you want to step us through?
Yes, sir. As discussed, we won't bother with the executive summary because that gets written once we agree with the rest. Bart's introduction was okay. I did make the minor edit for the IANA operator as suggested on call. I think that was the only thing on this section. So we will dive into the meat of the subject, the interpretations on section 2. We had the question about a sign. It's not a question, it's not agreed. I think we all generally agreed that maybe we would do a minor edit if it could be worked out, and we just haven't had time to work on that part yet. But it is flagged, and we will continue looking at it. The next text is section 3.2, second major bullet, where last time there was concern with the last two sub-bullets. The IANA operator will seek approval for the request from the ICANN board if it meets its requirements, and the IANA operator will seek approval from the appropriate parties, currently USGDOC. Now, Becky and I have had a chat about this. We really could take out all the sub-bullets. It would really not make any difference, and we would just leave, I see your hand, Bill. We would just leave for further clarity. The IANA operator should describe in detail to those parties what steps it will or may take in response to those parties' affirmative consent. So we tried to preserve the notion of IANA has to tell the people who are consenting what will happen if they do consent. Now, if this is still creating too much grief, I believe Becky and I agreed that we can just completely take it out. Over to you, sir.
Just a few things. Chris is saying that he doesn't have control over the document, and nor did I, so it's not scrolling automatically as you scroll it. If we could have that fixed, please, Christina or Bernie. I see Bill has his hand up, and I'll go to Bill in a moment. But just noting, Patricio noted somewhere in the screen that the GAC Princip It was truncated rather than get principles, so if you just note that one. And Cheryl noted that Maureen Hilliard will join the call as soon as she can. And I see now the scroll control removed, so all should be well. So over to Bill. Bill. Oh, and just noting that Danielle Kalchev has joined the meeting too.
A couple of questions, Bernie. I'm a little confused in terms of the two documents you set out. How are these two documents related in terms of what we're going to be discussing now and what we are discussing now? That's one question.
All right. The two documents are the latest version of this final report, which we're looking at right now. The second document was a highlighted version of the SIP publication document that we had published, and that's relating to Sections 5 and 6. And as I said in the email, trying to incorporate in a cut-and-paste operation the text from SIP into that, I thought would make it quite long, so I prefer to send along the SIP document, and when we get to Sections 5 and 6, we can refer to that document. Does that answer your question?
That answers that question. The second question, assuming we are on somewhere around page 4 of what you have marked as version 1.1.pdf on the screen?
Yes, sir.
Every time we have this call, I bring this up. Section 1 introduction, near the bottom it says, on interpretations of the policy statement. And every time we see that...
That's my fault. I missed that one.
And if you go further down after the scope, it's policy statement, and so on and so forth.
No, I'm sorry. I started the recording a little late.
You talked about it. You said, I'll fix that next time. Is there going to be another next time?
I will fix it, I promise.
My fault. I take the blame for that one.
Okay,
good catch. Thank you, Bill.
Yes, Bill, I'll make sure.
I've written
get
in big letters in my notes. Guidelines and Bill. Okay. Sorry.
Okay. And I note that Desiree has joined the room. So please continue, Benny.
So are we okay with truncating the three sub-bullets and changing the paragraph to simply ask, you know, requiring that IANA make clear to whoever is consenting to transfer what can and will happen?
I think there is no one seeking to speak against that, so let's regard the deletion as okay and...
I would ask Mark specifically because he had problems with the last two sub-bullets. So are you okay with this format, Martin?
Martin appears to have dropped off Adobe Connect.
All right. Well, then not hearing anything else. Cheryl...
Joel agreeing, so please continue.
Thank you, sir. Our next point is 3.3. What was brought up at the last meeting was that we were talking about the fact that redelegation is really a transfer, and we described that. But we really did not address what an unconsented redelegation was replaced by, which was a good catch. So here in track changes, we've got the addition to deal with that, which basically says, and that the use of the term unconsented redelegation also be dropped in favor of revocation followed by a delegation. So that matches the other language that we have and addresses that last part, which was a good catch last time, I think maybe from Patricio or Eberhardt, I'm not sure. So we'll be glad to take comments on that one.
see Nigel's indicating a tick, and so is Stephen, and there doesn't appear to be, and so is Cheryl, and nobody's seeking to speak, and so is Eberhard agreeing. So I think we have agreement. No one's seeking the floor. Thank you. Please continue.
All right. Thank you, sir. And moving along. 5.1. This is where we get into the SIP document. So what we'll do is we'll go over the text that was a little bit under discussion or raised some concerns at the last meeting, and we will then drop out of this document and go to the original SIP text to understand what it was saying. So in Section 5, it was the Section 5 header seemed to be fine, which was talking about the definition of a significantly interested party. The addition of manager in there has survived the last two meetings. I think that's all very good. So 5 itself is locked text now, and we are good. The one that seemed to raise the concern was 5.1. The FOI working group interprets the requirements for approval from significantly interested parties, Section 3.4 of RFC 1591, to require the IN operator to obtain, evaluate, and document input from significantly interested parties for delegations and transfers. So, as mentioned when we originally got this text, this went through a major edit to cram it all together so that it sort of fit in this version. And we will... I'm going to try and talk about 5 and 6 at the same time because we have to take this document off the screen, and then we will go to the SIP document and see the original text that we had. So here, I think the key point is to require the IN operator to obtain, evaluate, and document input from significantly interested parties for delegations and transfers. 5.2 and 5.3 seem to be okay, and unless someone has something right now, we will say that the text that is being considered with potential issues is 5.1. Under 6, again, the definition in 6 for stakeholders seemed to carry through as it did in our original work and did not raise any questions. But because we used the same principle as in 5 under 6.1 and 6.2, we have the same questions, which is why we're dealing with these as a block. 6.1, the FOI interprets the requirement for interested parties to have some voice, Section 3.4 of RFC 1591, to require the IANA operator to obtain, evaluate, and document input from stakeholders for delegations. 6.2, the FOI working group interprets the requirement for concerned or affected parties in transfers to communicate the IANA with the IANA operator, Section 3.6 RFC 1591, maybe there's an adjustment there. My text is a little small. Require the IANA operator to obtain, evaluate, and document input from stakeholders for transfers. So we sort of got that split up because the requirements were slightly different between delegations and transfers. So I think you see the mechanics and where they're similar. And basically what we will do now is we'll put the final document on ice for a minute, and we will go back to the original SIP text on that if there are no other points before we leave this document. Going once, going twice. Okay, so please be patient with me. I'll see if I have the recently shared. Whoops. Oh, come on. Yes, here we go. All right, so everyone should have a new document on their Adobe screen, which is called Draft Interim Report Significantly Interested Parties. Now, what I've done is I've gone through this, and we won't read the whole thing. I don't think there is any need to. The section that is of interest is the recommendations, and I believe I've highlighted it, so we'll just go down to that part. Yes. Okay. So, let's bring that up a bit because I don't have my glasses. There. Ah, I can actually read it. Okay, so the first part is IANA should undertake the steps necessary to implement the following interpretations of policy, definition of significantly interested parties, and subpoints. Those are the things that we saw and did not seem to cause any heartburn. So we're, as far as I'm concerned, unless someone is raising something relative to that now, we won't go into that part. The part of interest versus the recommendations that have been made in 5.1, 6.1, and 6.2, I believe, are contained in these parts. And we'll go through them in detail, and you'll understand the significance of the edits. We tried to cram everything into this. So applicants should be encouraged, 1.2 on the SIP document if you're not following in the Adobe room. Applicants should be encouraged to provide documentation of the support of stakeholders for the delegation, redelegation, or revocation requests. But IANA should also provide an opportunity for stakeholders to comment on the request via public process. These requirements do not modify or eliminate the rights, if any, of a designated manager existing prior to the adoption of RFC 1591. And stakeholders is used here to encompass significantly interested parties, blah, blah, blah. I see Bill has a question, so up to you.
Can I ask why you're using the word redelegation rather than transfer?
Yes, you may. And the reason we're using that is because we published this before we finally agreed to that, and I'm just using the official version of what was published for the public consultation, which was part of the reasons we needed edits when taking it into the final document.
I'm a little adrift here, so are you saying, okay, now you're going to fix this, or what's the purpose of reviewing this?
The purpose of reviewing this is there were concerns about the points we just finished in the other document, 5.1, 6.1, 6.2. The point I'm doing here is I'm quoting the original agreed-to text from SIP, which I used to derive those points, just to make sure everyone understands where they come from and to see if there are still issues or if we need to make some changes.
So I personally, it would be good for me if I could see a copy of the relevant section of the document that you're proposing that this applies to, as well as this document.
Yeah, I don't think we can do that in Adobe is part of the problem. I'm not sure how I could best accommodate you. So what I'm proposing right now is we'll just go through it, and then we'll go back to the other text. I'll put it up on another screen for myself. And if you have questions, I'll read it off. I think that's about the best I can do right now, unless I go and share my screen. Eberhardt, is that?
Well, I have a copy that you sent to me, which I can open and scroll down to a particular page and section myself. If you just were to, while you're discussing this section 1.2, perhaps refer to that other document section so I can back and forth, you know, just with my tab here.
Okay, well, in the SIP document, we're talking about recommendations 1.2, which is what's up on the screen right now.
Yeah, and then
okay,
I
have section B.
IWG version 1.1 PDF. Where do I go in that to see how you're referencing it? You know what I mean?
5.1, 6.1, 6.2 under section of recommendations.
Down at the bottom here.
And those points in the final document refer to, in the sidebar comments, that they're referring to the SIP document, public consultation.
All right, I'll work on doing that.
All right.
Yep.
You're welcome. Eberhard. If you're speaking, we're not hearing you.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, sir.
Okay. All documents that from now on will use the word transfer instead of redelegation. Am I correct in that?
All new documents from this point on use transfer unless we're describing it as in Section 3.3 to explain why we don't use redelegation anymore. That is correct. Thank you, Eberhard. Bill, your hand is still up. I'm guessing that's just waiting to go down. Thank you very much, sir. All right, so as I said, we'll go through Section 1.2 in the SIP document, and then we'll go back to Sections 5.1, 6.1, 6.2 in the final report. All right, applicants should be encouraged to provide documentation support of stakeholders for the delegation, redelegation, or revocation requests. But IANA should also provide an opportunity for stakeholders to comment on the request via public process. 1.2.1, these requirements do not modify or eliminate the rights of any delegated manager existing prior to the adoption of IRC 1591. I think we're all good with that. Stakeholders is used here to encompass significantly interested parties, and other parties referenced in RFC 1591. And I think that's fairly standard language, and we're all good with that, which is why it was accepted in here. And we've seen the basic subpieces of that in the text in the final report. 1.2.3, classification of input. IANA should develop, publish, and document its compliance with procedures for consideration of input from stakeholders, taking into account the nature of the commenting party's interest in the delegation, transfer, unconsented redelegation, revocation, and operation of the CCTLD and the relevance, substance, and weight of such input. The classification should be based on these FOI working group's interpretation of significantly interested parties. This classification must also take into account 1.2.3.1. In the case of a delegation, significantly interested parties should agree that the designated manager is the appropriate party and that other stakeholders have some voice in selecting the manager. In the case of transfer, stakeholder input should be considered and taken into account. IANA reports on delegations, transfers, and revocations should reflect consistent application of these FOI working group recommended guidelines and should include detailed results of IANA's evaluation of stakeholder input regarding the requested action. IANA functions managers requested to inform the GAC, CCNSO at each meeting. Those things were all the things that we dealt with at the bottom and really are not relevant to 5.1, 6.1, and 6.2. So I think we're sort of clear on where we are here, that we were asking IANA to provide some mechanism and to classify the input and report on this. When they're doing delegations, transfers, and revocations. Now, before we go back to the text in the final report, I'll take some questions. I see Stephen. Stephen.
Stephen, you're on mute.
I put my hand up accidentally, it looks like.
Okay, I'll put it down for you. Okay.
Anyone else?
Bernie, can you hear me? Hello?
Yes, sir.
Oh, you can't hear me? I'm having real trouble with audio today. I don't know why.
I'm hearing you very well, Keith.
Excellent. Okay. I think the main issue was from last week was possibly Martin's, or if not, it was Eberhard's, but it was around the word obtain. I think we're going to a great deal of detail here, but the issue on the new text was that IANA should obtain this input, and there was some conjecture that IANA shouldn't be seeking to get it. It should merely have a vehicle by which it could get it. But please feel free to correct me if I'm wrong. And I see Martin has his hand raised, so he might want to clarify that. Martin.
Yes, Keith, I did raise that because I remembered that we had had a discussion about this when we were talking about significantly interested parties, and there was, I thought, a general feeling at that stage that telling IANA to obtain this input itself was a little bit excessive. And that, in fact, it should be the people who are putting in the request who should be consulting their local stakeholders and reporting on it. And there was also then the opportunity for stakeholders to comment on the request via a public purpose, public process. And when I look at the 1.2 that's on the screen, that's exactly what I think it says, that applicants should be encouraged to provide the documentation, but IANA should also provide an opportunity for stakeholders to comment via a public process. And that, I think, perhaps was the words that can go into 5.1.6.1 without putting an obligation on IANA that IANA could not be in a position to carry out. Thanks.
Thanks, Martin. I think, yeah, that does clarify. So the conjecture is still around the word obtain rather than any of the rest of the intent. Anyway, Bernie, back to you.
So if there was confusion, it should be heaped upon me. I apologize. In trying to smash all of this together in a format that fit the text that we find in the final report was mine, which is why I explained this every time we've gone through it. So I'm perfectly happy to give it another shot and taking an approach that is very close to what we've got in 1.2, if that will make everyone happy. But before we do that, let's go back to what we've actually written in 5.1 and what I've written in 5.1 and 6.1 and see if that sort of matches. All right? 1.2, just one more time before we leave it. Applicants should be encouraged to provide documentation for support of the support of stakeholders for delegation, redelegation, or revocation requests. But IANA should also provide an opportunity for stakeholders, and we define stakeholders to include significantly interested parties, to comment on the request via public process. All right, so give me an instant here, and we'll try to bring back document we were looking at a few minutes ago. I think it's this one. At least I'm really hoping it's this one. Let's go back up just to make sure. No, I don't think that's that one. Christina, do you know what it's called? Because it doesn't seem to be called the same thing.
Sorry, okay, you want the other document?
Yeah, the document we started the call with.
Okay. Hang on.
There's a bunch of documents there, but they don't have the same name.
Okay. That's the
0.45. No, that's not the one.
What's the one? The public comment one.
Ah, okay, I think that's... no, this is the that's the significantly interested parties we were just trying to leave, the document we were looking at before that.
Okay, well, that should be... okay. I see now.
Ah,
should be
okay.
This one.
Yes, that is the one. Okay, excellent. So, 5.1, the FOI Working Group interprets a requirement for approval from significantly interested parties, Section 3.4 RFC 1591, to require the IANA operator to obtain, evaluate, and document input from significantly interested parties for delegation and transfers. All right, so I guess...
So the Martin's conjecture is that the evaluation and documenting of input is quite appropriate. It's the word obtained that the IANA operator shouldn't be seeking to actually obtain, but should be gathering or elucidating or some other word. But it's not. There's no obligation on IANA to go out and seek input.
Well, the reason it ended up being like this, just so I'm clear, I was trying to be ambiguous here, and I probably failed to do what my objective was. And my objective was give flexibility to IANA. If a requester is providing great input, then IANA has obtained the input. If there is no input coming for whatever reason and input is required, then it would leave IANA the room to try and obtain some. So this was my great hidden purpose here, and I seem to have caused concern with the word obtain, which I sort of understand that we've discussed it. Bill.
Well, just looking in the chat, before we go to Bill, I see Chris has suggested the word seek rather than obtain. I don't know if that would satisfy Martin's concerns, but let's hear from Bill first.
I would add a little more, as you might say, depth and substance to that word by, instead of saying obtain, say something similar to or perhaps exactly say solicit, receive, and evaluate. And document, yes. Solicit, receive, evaluate, and document instead of obtain. That's my proposal. Anyway, I think we do have to put it on them to go out of their way to get these things.
Okay. Martin.
Thanks. I'm struggling to know why we can't go to the text that we'd already agreed in D1.2. of the significantly interested parties. So the text in 5.1, for example, would read, the FOIWG interprets the requirement for approval from significantly interested parties to require or to encourage applicants to provide documentation of the support of stakeholders and for IANA, the IANA operator, to evaluate and document this input. So essentially wording like that draws on the already agreed, because as it stands, just adding more words to this paragraph, I'm not sure necessarily makes the thing any clearer, because you've still got the where does the onus lie to collect the evidence? And in my mind, the onus should be on the requester to show that he has been consulting the significant interested parties. Thanks.
That sounds to me like the perfect wording. Thanks, Martin. Does anyone have any issues? Did you catch it on the way through, Bernie?
I did, sir, and that's essentially what I was proposing when we were in the SIP document. I can adjust these three bullets relative to that, and I think that would be fairly faithful to the text we had as agreed text in SIP and would hopefully resolve the issues here.
Yep. Thanks. Becky's just asking, Martin, if you could write out that text maybe in the chat room by doing some judicious cutting and pasting.
So we'll keep an eye on that on the way through if you have a chance to do that, Martin. Okay, is there anything else on... Oh, sorry.
I was just about to note that I did that off the top of my head. It's probably going to be safer to go and just extract the wording from the transcript when the transcript is available.
Fair enough. Thanks, Martin. Okay, back to you, Bernie.
Thank you. So if we're going to do that for 5161 and 62, then that would take care of those points. So we will come back with the text as per that for everyone to actually have a look at. All right, our next point was 8, and I believe it was Eberhardt last time that had an issue with this text. We'll read it, and then this was not too long to cut and paste, so I went and got the original text, and we can compare those looking at both pretty much on the same screen, I hope. The FOI working group interprets the requirement that the manager serves as a trustee for the delegated domain with a duty to serve the nation in the case of a country code in the global internet community, section 3.2, RC 1591, to require the manager to, one, provide mechanisms to allow for registrants and significantly interested parties provide input regarding operational policy to the manager, and two, to preserve the security and stability of the CCTLD, and three, to work with the IN operator to preserve the stability and security of the global DNS internet. Now, the thing that seemed to concern Eberhardt when we were walking through this last time was the first point, provide mechanisms to allow for registrants and significantly interested parties to provide input regarding operational policy to the manager. I see Stephen has his hand up. I was actually going to ask Eberhardt if I got that right. Eberhardt, you get the first go at this.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
Okay. I don't want to renegotiate everything, but I don't think in the RFC to say this. I can live with if we remove the word operation. I can live with regarding policy, but I cannot live with operation.
We just lost you, Eberhardt. But I see the issue. So Eberhardt's issue is he doesn't mind if it said input regarding policy to the manager, but doesn't like the word operational being there.
Can you see it in the chat room? Yeah. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, can hear you now.
Yeah, we need to remove the word operational. It opens a lot of doors in a local situation by waving this document around to attack the local managers. We must have overlooked it initially, but I would not have stood for it in my attention. So we really need to remove this.
Okay. Quick comments from Stephen and Nigel. I see Bill suggesting that he's agreeing with the deletion of the word operational. So, Stephen?
When we're done with this, come back to me because it's not directly related to this. It's a little twerk up in Section 8 proper.
Okay. Nigel?
Okay. Well, no, I don't think we should remove the word operational. I think we should remove it all. I don't see anything in RFC that we're interpreting that produces anything like this. This is us stepping over the line into creating new policy. It strikes me that the 432 purports to interpret the manager serves as trustee for the delegated domain with the duty to serve the nation in the case of a country code and the global internet community. There's nothing in there that says it should provide mechanisms for registrants and significantly interested parties to provide input regarding any kind of policy. I mean, we all know that it is good practice that we have ways of getting policy advice from our local internet community or the significantly interested parties. But I don't think there's anything in RFC 1591 that says it in those terms, so I don't think that this is helpful. I think the whole thing should go.
Okay, thanks, Nigel. Chris? Come in, Chris. You're on mute.
Can you hear me?
Yes, can now.
We spent a very, very long time coming to these conclusions. I remember huge discussions about statements of manager service as a trustee and so on. I really do think that removing the whole paragraph would mean having to go back and check everything in the document to make sure that it hasn't had any flow-on effects or and so on. I've got no issue whatsoever in removing the word operational, and I'd encourage us all to accept that and move on.
Yeah, I'm in reasonable agreement with that proposal that looking at the quoted text below, highlighted in yellow, there is, if we remove the word operational, there is nothing inconsistent with that in actual fact. Anyway, I see Stephen still has his hand held for something else. Nigel is, then has his hand re-raised, and then Martin. So Nigel first. Oh, Nigel's got a green tick as well as his hand raised. He's suggesting agreement with that. Martin.
Thanks. When I look at 4.3.2.2, the wording actually does include operational policy. So it's provide mechanisms to allow for registrants and significantly interested parties to provide input regarding operational policy to the manager. So in fact, the wording in the paragraph 8 above does seem to have taken quite, well, in fact, all of 4.3.2.2. So just at this stage, deciding that you want to remove a word that was already agreed does then leave us saying, well, have we actually got that consistency with the original text that we agreed? And like Chris, I seem to remember us spending many a jolly evening discussing this.
Sorry to interrupt everybody, Martin. I just want to clarify before we go off on a tangent. I'm comfortable take the word operational out. I'm comfortable to leave it in, but I understand Eberhard's point. The point that he's made very clearly is that it slipped by him and he's very, very uncomfortable. I don't think taking the word operational out makes a huge difference, but I do think removing the clause itself makes a huge difference. So I just want to make sure that you're clear on what I just said rather than so that everybody's clear on what I just said rather. Thanks.
Yeah, well, can I make sure that you're clear on what I've just said, that I'm quite comfortable having the quotation from the earlier text. I am actually also quite comfortable with the idea of removing the word operational, but I think we do need to go back and revisit that earlier text to make sure that it does stay consistent, and then actually agree to remove it from the significantly interested party text. I don't think we can quote verbatim and then just drop one word from it, because then there are big questions about why did we drop that one word.
Okay, Eberhard, back to you.
Sorry, as I said, I do not recall any major discussion about it. I don't want to if we can remove the word operational, I'm satisfied and we can move on. If it had come to my attention initially, Nigel's position that we need to remove the whole, but with the paragraph, if we remove the word operational, and therefore that's what I propose.
Okay, look, I think Martin has indicated that he's not exactly joyous to live, but can live with dropping the word operational. So on that basis, two speakers in the queue, Chris, then Martin. Chris. No, Chris doesn't want the floor. Martin.
Yeah, sorry, I obviously wasn't as clear as I thought I was. I don't actually have a problem with removing the word operational off the top of my head. My point, though, is that we need to go back and revisit the significantly interested parties document to make sure that it is removed from that text as well. I feel uncomfortable having something that is a quotation from a document that then just at random and without explanation drops a word. And it is that bit that concerns me. So if we're removing operational from 8 here, we need to understand the consequences and remove the word from 4.3.2.2 of the significantly interested parties text.
I think the difficulty with that is that that has been text that's been through a public consultation, so it's a finally agreed bit of text. So I think it would be more consistent to stay with operational policy in 8 than to go back and change the SIP document on that basis. Chris.
One way of dealing with it would be to take the word operational out and put in a footnote that simply says, you know, following discussion of the FOI working group, there was a small change from the original document. I don't think there's any problem with that. I take Martin's point that it might be sensible to at least reference the fact that we've made a change. So just a simple bullet point might work. Footnote rather than might work.
Okay, thanks, Chris. That's a potential solution. Eberhard, do you, before I hand over to you, do you think you could live with operational policy since it was in the original agreed text? Over to you, Eberhard.
I'm willing to die in the ditch on this. This is a major point.
At the point of debate.
This operational policy has slipped by. Had it come to my attention, I would have never. We must find a way, preferably a noiseless way, of removing.
Eberhard, would you be happy if we did what Chris just suggested? We dropped the word operational, but added in as a footnote, noting that in the original text it said operational policy.
I wouldn't be happy with it. I'm not dying in a ditch on it.
Keith.
Hello. That sounds like Nigel. Was it Nigel?
Keith. Yeah, sorry. I'm here.
Yes.
I think we're getting too hung up over process. We may have gone through this in a different part of the document, even one that's gone out to public consultation in the past, but we're not proposing major surgery, and our final report consolidates everything that we've done, and I think we can easily lose the word operational throughout our final report before that final report is finalized. Personally, I think the whole thing needs to go, as I said earlier, because there's nowhere in RFC 1591 that this, there's any language that I can construe this to mean, but I'm happy to go with the flow and do what Chris suggests and just drop the word operational. But let's not get too hung up about this, about what might have gone on in the past. Let's just do it, make the edit, and put it in our final report this way.
Okay. Eberhard, did you want the floor again, or is your hand still up?
Yeah, I just unlowered, but I support what Nigel is saying.
Okay. Thank you, Eberhard. So I think we have some compromise there. So, Stephen, you want to comment on this, or is this the new point? Stephen?
Let's try that again.
Yes.
Back to this operational policy issue question. If we drop operational from it, so it just reads regarding policy, that doesn't exclude operational policy from being inputted to the manager. So I don't see that there's any downside to dropping operational out. I think it should go. I don't think it's consequential.
Okay. Thanks, Stephen. Any further comments? Okay. So back to you, Bill Simich. Bill.
Yeah, Stephen's comment raises an interesting point, and I would like Becky's opinion. I suspect that the word operational may have been put in there in order to limit the type of policy that input could be accepted under. And it's possible that maybe another word that could be put there, but once you just say policy, it could be any policy, pricing, whatever. Again, I think Nigel's comment that there's absolutely no mention of this kind of activity or requirement or even a hint of it in the RFC is something we need to consider, and I'm suggesting we might want to just put this aside for future discussion.
Okay. Thanks, Bill.
I'm happy to respond to that.
Okay, thanks, Vicky.
So I think that there's a difference between saying input into policy versus input into operations. And I think I disagree. I think that Eberhard's concern is sort of is the input is the, you know, every time you don't like something, you bash the manager over the head about operations as opposed to policy. So I actually do think that getting rid of, I don't know what operational policy is other than policy. And I do think that that is different than actual operations. I am remembering that we did have very, very long discussions about what this trusteeship meant, and it was about sort of, and again, of course, this only applies to CCTLD is governed by 1591, but that, you know, that there was a sort of general notion that, the community could have input into, you know, who was served and those kinds of issues. So, Bill, I think that there is a distinction between operations and policy, I'm comfortable with taking operational out. I don't think that it expands the scope. I think it clarifies a possible ambiguity that somehow operational policy could be construed to include actual operations.
Thanks, Becky. I'm inclined to want to go with Chris's suggestion that we drop the word operational in 8, but add it as a footnote saying that in 4.3.2.2 we agreed, you know, that it was operational policy and reference it there. So can we have a look at that as an option, as a compromise, that should appease everybody. Is there anyone who would object to that?
Keith, I think it's worth just mentioning, I'm fine, I mean, worth saying, I think, in a bullet point, you know, upon final consideration, we removed the word operational. In other words, rather than just making a full statement that it was in there, it's not in here.
Yeah.
So, you know, upon final consideration. And I'm only saying that you should put it in on the basis that, that it explains, it handles Martin's point that there has been a change.
Yeah. Okay, I see Eberhard's disagreeing anyway. And Stephen and Becky still have their hands raised. I don't know if that's...
That's a mistake on my part, sorry.
I can put it down for you. So, Eberhard.
I don't particularly like, not like Nigel, I don't see the need for the footnote. What we write in our final report, and I don't, we don't need to, I actually think we're spending this, trying to do, there has never been any discussion about this, much as we're discussing it now.
This is
a major issue for me. This is a major issue for me, and I would have remembered it. I don't want to renegotiate the past. I want to move. For my proposal is that we leave it out and go on.
Eberhard, I think we did go over and over this several times. I don't really want to dig back in the transcripts, but 4.3.2.2 below is agreed text. It was agreed by the working group, and it has been through an iteration of public consultation, and it does say operational policy. So it has been agreed, and I think objecting to something that has been debated thoroughly and agreed is perhaps not the most useful way of us ever getting through this document. But back to you, Eberhard, and then to Chris.
Chris mentioned this has slipped by, and it's important point, and I don't want to revisit old things. I would like to find
Sorry, why are you?
He's disappeared.
Yep, Eberhard, we can't hear you.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
I want to re-debate this. It must have slipped by. I'm not really wanting to re-debate this. I want to move forward. I want to find...
Every time Eberhard's about to tell us what he wants to find, he disappears.
Yes, Eberhard, you're...
Can I make a suggestion that might help? Yeah. I think... If we were to, as a general principle, put footnotes in where we've made editorial changes or on final consideration we've made changes, that wouldn't necessarily not be highlighted, but rather would be one of a series of footnotes that would deal with changes that we've made.
Yep. Okay, thanks, Chris. And I see Cheryl's agreeing with that as a suggestion. Nigel.
Thanks, Keith. I think we're getting a little battle weary and we're getting to the end of the campaign. Look, it's really quite simple. Everything we do up until the final report stops being a draft final report and becomes a finalised final report is not final. I know it was agreed text. I know that we are allowed to make a mistake and fall asleep and miss the occasional thing. And because we're revisiting it in the context of this part of the report, we spotted something that for one reason or other, none of us object to removing the word operational. I told you I think I should all not be there, but I'm willing to go with the flow. So we just take it out here. We take it out in the other place because nobody objects to us taking it out. I've heard no good reason. It's not in there's nothing in RFC 1591 that you can point to that means what we're saying here. take it out, move on, and stop worrying about it. I think if you put in complicated footnotes, although I do like what Chris said about the footnote, I don't think it's particularly necessary. I'm beginning to fall asleep here.
Yeah, and I think we are falling over a very, very low hurdle on this point. But Martin has raised the issue and does have strenuous objections, or I understood him to have quite strenuous objection to dropping the word operational without putting in a footnote. So there is...
Keith, if we're going to go down this road, I'm going to raise a serious objection that we are writing policy here and it's out of scope. Point me to the words that we're interpreting here that produces this conclusion, and I'll happily withdraw that objection. Otherwise, I object to the whole lot on that basis.
Okay.
Well, Martin,
Nigel,
the words we're dealing with are the trustee words from Section 3.
Yeah, and I can't see that you can construe the trustee words into saying this means you must do this. I can say it means that you must drink red Ribena.
Nigel, it's inappropriate to you know, don't try and throw the baby out with the bathwater here. It's not necessary. If we can reach some sort of agreement that we can note textual changes, I don't think there's an issue.
Okay, look.
I've already said I'll go with the flow of what you've said, Chris. So. But let's not get hung up on this. Let's just do it and move on.
Well, I'm hoping we can do that. I saw Martin was seeking to speak, but is no longer. But Martin, is there a way... Oh, your hand's re-raised. So, Martin, is there a way we can move on?
Keith, this is Dottie. Yes. I'm not on a computer, so I can't raise my hand.
Okay, Dottie.
I do not think we should create a document that has footnotes. I think we should create a document that has no footnotes and make the document say what we want it to say. Because footnotes are just not appropriate to this.
Okay, look, I have to agree with you, Dottie. I think if we can have a clean document, it's more subjective and objective. So let's try and avoid it. Martin, back to you.
Yeah, thanks, Keith. Really, my concern comes with the fact that we've had the significantly interested party text that's gone through consultation. It's gone out, and we're now going to adopt the text here and change it. Now, I have no problems with us changing it. That's not my problem. My problem is that you then make considerably more out of the issue by hiding it, and then somebody coming in and saying, "Why did you say that in one place?" And there's something that's slightly different in another place. So it just seems to me, at least in the initial text that we're putting forward for essentially what would be a subsequent discussion with other parties, that we're actually indicating that we have had second thoughts. And you know, I certainly recognise your point, Keith, that this earlier document, having gone through the whole process, we can't just sort of turn around and say, we're going to make a change, and we're going to make changes to this document, and because that would then put us back into having to go through the approvals process again. So it just seems to me that the text that we produce now, the footnote is an explanatory footnote rather than, this will be the footnote that exists in the final text once we've actually had a discussion on it. But at the end of the day, all we're doing is saying it's a bit of a management of risk that somebody does compare the two documents and that there's a difference. And, of course, it's easier to see that there is a difference when Bernie has so kindly
pasted the text from the earlier document in nicely coloured font in front of us in this document.
Hmm. Well, yeah, I'm just not really sure where we can go with this. We seem to have reached an impasse on what seems to be a relatively minor thing, but I'm actually more in agreement with Martin's view that if you drop the word operational, you're opening up every single one of your policies to input from the community, including your human resources policy, and so you're inviting discussion with your registrants and other interested parties over what your HR policy might be or what your business continuity policy might be or anything else. And I find that if you confine it, if you're using the words to confine it to operational policy, then that seems to be the appropriate area where significantly interested parties should be having input. Anyway, I'm not seeing a way through this, and I don't know that we want to spend a lot more time on it today. So I see we have Nigel, Stephen, and Eberhardt with their hands raised. So I'll draw a line under discussion under Eberhardt. So starting with Nigel, we work through these three, and then we'll move on. Nigel.
Keith, what you just said is both entirely 100% correct and the exact reason why we should not be saying any of this. It's open to us on reviewing our work and our document to find that we may have made a small misstep earlier and to excise that misstep. I don't really think that anybody is going to be saying to us, well, you said that in the draft, but in the final report you took that out. This is what revisions do. This is what bodies like ourselves do in their final report. They spot the odd thing. We're not perfect. We let something slip by. As I said, personally, my view is that we should excise this because I cannot get the construction that we are putting on this from the original words of RFC 1591 in any way, shape, or form. So we should excise it in both places, and we don't need footnotes, we just do it. Now, if the mood of the meeting is against me on that point, which I think is the correct way, then I'm happy you remove just one word. My view is that it all should go. But Keith, you're entirely correct. That's why we shouldn't be saying that anybody has any input to any kind of policy at this point. That's not what the trusteeship thing means. There might be other reasons, like it's good practice or everybody's done it and so on, and it's best practice. I'm not saying you they shouldn't have input to policy. I'm saying that these words don't mean that they should, so we shouldn't say that they do.
Yep. Okay. Thanks, Nigel. And look, I'm even though we've debated and agreed text in the past, I'm sort of sharing your view that if we can't get agreement, then the easiest way forward is to drop it, but I think we'd be also dropping some fairly other useful points if we did that. Anyway, Stephen and then Eberhardt. So Stephen first.
Housekeeping question primarily. Does not the entire final version of this document have to go out for public review / comment?
That's an interesting question. I guess Bart or Bernie would be in the best position to comment on that. Do either of you have a comment?
I would say in principle no, because, say, the way the charter was originally drafted is that we would, or the working group would produce final reports on each of the topics, and that these final reports would then be submitted to the CCNSO and the GAC for support or endorsement. During the process, we agreed with the GAC that we would end up with, say, a final report that would contain
all the final recommendations. So in principle, so you could say the if you go back to the consent document that was adopted, the recommendations were put forward to the CCNSO and the CAC after one consultation on the interim report, and they were adopted, but the CAC felt uncomfortable. That's why we're going through this process. In principle, you could say that for each of the different chapters, you could produce the final report that contains the recommendations, and this final report is just capturing them again. So you don't need to go through a public consultation, because it will be discussed for adoption by the CCNSO and the GAC.
Thanks, Abbott.
Okay.
Stephen, I think the short answer is no.
Right, that's what I wanted to find out. Thanks.
Thank you. Eberhard.
Okay. I don't agree with you. Operations, human resources, management, and business is not policy, it's operations. No input into operations. That's a non-starter and a ditch before this happens. Seriously. Yeah? And I do not also not be held to an earlier mistake after identifying it, just because not acceptable to me, even at this late stage.
Okay. Thanks, Eberhard. I was going to draw a line under Eberhard. I see Chris has his hand raised. So last comment on the topic, Chris. If we can't resolve it, we'll carry it forward to London. Chris.
Sure. Thanks, Keith. I just wanted to kind of do a level set because I'm slightly concerned that we're talking about very different things here. My view is that it's critical that we do address what trustee means. We had a very, very, very detailed, long discussion over many calls about coming up with conclusions. What we're actually talking about here is the interpretation of the word operational. If you're operating as trustee for your local community, etc., and I think we all agree that that's the case, then quite clearly there should be an obligation for there to be input on policy. If I understand Eberhard's problem correctly, he's concerned that operational policy will be interpreted in a different way. So really, if we are uncomfortable with operational policy, and I completely get that Eberhard is uncomfortable with that, and others are uncomfortable with the word, with just the word policy, then the solution is not to take the whole paragraph out, but rather to suggest an alternative description of policy or a word that goes before policy. And on that basis, I think that we will need to roll it forwards to let everybody think about it and come up with some suggestions. Thanks, Keith.
Okay. I think on that basis, let's see if Becky, Bernie and I can't come up with some alternate wording that might work, and let's hold that over. And if we can and get it onto the list, we will. Otherwise, it's a topic for London. Okay, thank you, and I see people are agreeing with that as a process. Can we move on, please, Bernie?
Yes, sir.
Oh, just before you do, too, just noting Patricio has left the call.
Thank you, sir. All right. We actually get in the recommendations here because we're all the way through. Here we've got some text. One of the heartburn sections was the authority section, and I'm actually going to leave this one and come back to it unless people really object, because this one may drag out a bit like the previous one, and I'd like for us to get the other things done, because I think they're cleaner and easier, or at least I hope so.
Well, just before you just before you move on, Bernie, can we go back to that? Just could I ask people to indicate if they have a problem with it by putting up a little cross beside their name? Yeah, the
tick or a cross.
Yeah, I see Eberhardt's agreeing. Stephen's agreeing. Cheryl's agreeing. Chris is agreeing. Is there any dissent? Nigel is indifferent. I'm not seeing any objections, so I think we could consider that to be accepted text.
Nigel has to abstain because it's his language.
Okay. Martin's still on the call. I can't recall if this was one of the things that Martin objected to or not. But Martin is here, so Martin has his hand raised. So, Martin.
Yeah, I've abstained from this because I need to read the text again. But I don't think that this was one that I'd originally raised an issue on.
Okay. Well, I think we have general agreement then, but we need a second reading on it anyway, so that should give Martin some more time and others. So thank you all, and please proceed, Bernie.
Thank you, sir. All right. One of the heartburn sections was section one was fine. Section two, we had some. The original language was more around some stuff we borrowed from the IDM PDP policy. Chris thought it was heavy. Some other people didn't like it. So we adjusted that, and now the first bullet under two says the CCNSO Council should consider chartering a working group to collaborate with IANA to develop content and other tools to educate and inform stakeholders about IANA's processes and procedures consistent with the FOI working group interpretation. Over to you.
I see Bill's agreeing, Chris is agreeing. Any objections? Cheryl's agreeing. Any objections? Stephen's agreeing, Eberhardt's agreeing. Violent agreement everywhere. Can we consider this agreed text? Thank you all. Please proceed, Benny.
Yes, sir. The second bullet did not elicitate any comments, so we're going to keep that one. The third bullet rose some considerations. Becky and I went through this. Given how the second bullet is now structured, we can actually strike all of the third paragraph of the third bullet and actually thus remove any of the issues associated with that, if everyone's okay with that.
Any objections? I see Cheryl's in agreement with striking it. So is Daniel. People seem to be happy. Nobody's objecting, so consider it struck off. Thank you, Bernie.
Okay, we're actually done here, sir.
That's the end. Excellent. Okay, I note we have ICANN London coming up in a couple of weeks. It looks to me like we might even struggle to conclude this document there, so I will work on a plan of just in case we need some calls in between, working on a schedule of calls for July, August, September. I remain very hopeful that we can finish this in London, just noting that we have had our meeting approved to go to 3 hours in London, so please mark from 9 till midday in your diaries, local time, London, on the Thursday, the 26th 6th of June, and we'll see if we can get through it then. Eberhard has his hand raised, so Eberhard.
Bernard, can you just circulate a new text which has everything in black and white, that only the contentious or the unagreed sections are marked, so that we can concentrate on this?
Yes, sir, will do.
Okay, thanks, Eberhard. Thanks, Benny. Anything else? Any other business from anyone else? If not, thank you all for your participation and your willingness to compromise along the way. Let's see if we can, I really remain hopeful that we can get this finished by the conclusion of the London ICANN meeting. Thank you all, and we'll see you in London. Cheers.
Bye.
Thanks, Keith. Thanks, bye.
Bye.